This is Dave Glowatz.
There's only one.
I, the only Dave Glowatz that we're aware of, am here with the Chicago Reader's Ben Jarofsky. Looks like you're having fun today, Ben.
I'm particularly giddy because I'm trying to interview aldermen or aldermanic candidates. It's always fun to do. You'll see that story in a couple of weeks.
Well, we'll look forward to that. Today, however, we're talking about your story that is titled either Getting Along Without Him Now in the print version of the Reader or What's Next for Chicago Public Schools in the online version. Do we know why that's happening?
Why what?
Why they're now having two different titles.
Oh, yeah. Didn't we discuss this already?
You didn't know last week.
Oh, I've since learned.
Tell us.
Apparently, there's a way of phrasing a headline online that draws more hits.
So they're using search engine friendly keywords, as we say in the biz.
You seem to know more about it than I do.
In this article, you talk about sort of the legacy, such as it is, of former CPS head Ron Huberman.
Ronnie, come back. I miss you.
What he left behind. And what lies ahead for CPS.
Yes.
And you touch on charter schools, and that's the first thing
yes.
I want to talk about.
My favorite subject.
Well, then let's talk about
actually,
that.
Actually, I'll be writing more about charters as the year unfolds, but go ahead.
Well, let's lay some foundation then for our listeners.
All right.
You write that charter schools don't have to take troublesome students who happen to live in the district. And I'd like to help our listeners distinguish between charter schools and what CPS calls selective enrollment schools, like magnet schools.
You've already now introduced three different criteria. I mean, three different types of schools.
So are not magnet schools selective enrollment schools?
If you view magnet as a generic, in its most generic term, then a charter school is a magnet school.
So selective enrollment schools, as I understand it, means that a student has to somehow test or meet some criteria to get in.
All right. Selective enrollment school has a very specific meaning. Let's just back up if we're going to do generic. A magnet school, the name comes from the sense that for integration purposes, this is how it all began, racial integration, the school would have some special feature that would draw students from outside their tribal enclaves, which they love to live within, this being Chicago.
I think that's almost an ethnic slur, but go ahead.
I've slurred the entire city of Chicago so many times. I'm equal opportunity.
But magnet schools.
Back to magnet schools. So you have this draw that pulls them out of their neighborhoods and sends them to schools where people of different races and ethnicities. Now, from that, they have something called, what did you call it?
Selective enrollment.
Selective enrollment. That's a school where you have to take a test. There's a threshold test score that one must have to get in. A charter school is a magnet in that it draws people from outside a community. It's got a special feature. And the special feature generally is they don't have to abide by the rules and regulations that pretty much every other school in Chicago has to abide by, including magnet schools or other magnet schools. They don't have to pay their teacher the union scale. They don't have to abide by tenure rules and regulations that can fire teachers instantaneously. If they say, if they mandate that the teachers have to wear their underwear on the outside of their pants, the teachers will have to wear their underwear.
In a more pragmatic sense, the ability of students to get into it.
A magnet school or charter school.
Into a charter school.
Yes.
It's not restricted in any way, is it?
Well, of course, it's restricted by enrollment.
Other than size.
Yeah, it's restricted by the whims of the people who are determining who gets into their school. If you go to a regular magnet school, every student in Chicago applies. You throw your name into the lottery and you apply, and presumably there's a fair and unbiased lottery, and they take names out of a hat or a whatever, and that's who get enrolled. At a charter school, they could be much more selective. They could do interviews. They can determine that you're not in the best interest of the school or the school's not in the best interest of you. Again, there are no rules or regulations.
So they could do whatever they want to limit
and then
the
they
enrollment.
Can kick you out.
Yeah, that's the other feature I'm interested in. So that's what I would call selective retention.
Yeah.
We're in a CPS, regular CPS public school. If you fail classes, you just get flunked, yeah. And they still have to keep you, where a charter can just, it's a sort of ongoing cherry picking. Well, in your article, you mentioned a bill in the General Assembly introduced by State Senator Heather Staines to take the control of charter schools away from school districts and give it to a new state commission. Is this bill applied just to Chicago Public Schools only, or is it a statewide bill?
I think it's statewide.
What do you think is the purpose of this?
I don't know what her stated reason is. I do know this. What the practical effect is secession, removing the charters from the Chicago Public School. You're funneling money, essentially, through the Chicago Public Schools to the charters. The way a charter works now is that there's a per-pupil expenditure that is awarded to each charter based on a formula, and that money comes from state funds and property taxes, etc. That's what a charter gets per student. Whatever they raise beyond the per student expenditure, they can use toward whatever needs they have, you know, special programs, building rental, whatever, you know. And charters are regulated by the Board of Education. The Board of Ed approves charters, and then the Board of Ed can also decertify charters. This is what Arne Duncan used to always say, that, you know, we're not wedded to every single charter. If they work, we keep them. If they don't work, we get rid of them. This bill would essentially take charters out from the control of the Board of Education. So they wouldn't have the authority to register them or create them or decertify them. And yet they would have to funnel the money to them.
They couldn't decide which ones to invest.
Or more to the point, well, equally to the point, to decertify. Mm-hmm. So if a charter had political clout, well, regardless, it would continue. Of course, that's the way it is anyway.
It's a curious power play.
It's people saying, you know what? We just want the money and we don't want any rules or regulations. We don't want to be part of the larger body.
It would appear to be something that the corporations who control charters would have advocated for.
Yes, David. It's a way of sort of further deregulating the charters.
So it's a deregulation
bill. It's deregulation, and as we know, deregulation works so well in our system. Whenever
we'll leave that for another day. Lastly, you mentioned towards the end of your article Mayor-elect Emanuel and the fact that he has an education transition team among his other myriad transition teams, like the government reinvention and budget transition team, the transportation team, the public safety team. I'm wondering what you think the purpose of these transition teams are. I realize you tried to ask the question about this particular team of the mayor-elect without an answer, but I'm thinking if I was in his position and I had a transition team, I would be doing, you know, data collection on the area in which I'm looking to administer. But these teams seem to be sort of celebrity panels. They don't look to be staffed like people who are going to like dig in and do that data collection. So I'm just wondering, do you have an opinion, an insight into what the purpose of these transition teams are, the real purpose?
I tend to be very skeptical of transition teams, like I'm very skeptical of mayoral appointed bodies. We've had this conversation. So this is like the transition mayoral appointed body. It's largely for public show. In reality, they won't listen to what these people tell them. Most of the people will be too afraid to speak their minds. They'll get a sense of where the body is going, and they'll say whatever they have to do to be in accordance. Anybody who dares to differ will be driven from the room, exiled, and wind up talking to people like me. I think, you know, this administration, to my opinion, is pretty much more the same as the last administration, very centralized, one man, one rule. People that go to work for him or go to advise him are going to learn early on that it's not a democracy. The larger question is, and this is the question I asked, and it was not answered, who's Emanuel's educational advisor? Rahm Emanuel's never shown much interest in public education in his career. If he has any model, it seems to be this sort of crush he has on the New York City model, where they completely centralized control under one powerful mayor who farmed it out to a lawyer named Joe Klein, who had no educational experience anyway, and they just randomly fired people and moved people around and gave out orders and ultimatums and mistook the fact that everybody had to jump when they said jump for progress, you know, and manipulated the books when it came to test scores. If that's his model, then it should be a rocky run. But you know, I always try to be looking on the good side. It's like Lincoln said, you put your enemies in a room. So maybe he just wants to put all these types in one room so he could do the opposite.
On that depressing note, Ben Jarofsky of the Chicago Reader, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you.
This is Dave Gloetz. You've been listening to the rest of the story with Ben Jarofsky. If you get a chance, check back at MrRadio.org for other interviews or subscribe to our podcast. Thanks for listening.